Welcome to this exciting episode of Talking Pork, the podcast created for the food service industry. I'm your host, Vanessa Barnes, Business Development Manager, Food Service Australian Pork. So moving on to today,
yes,
and what you're up to, and with your journey and all that you've done throughout your career, you have moved into the television space, and we've seen you quite often on Studio 10.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So TV, like, one of my goals was to.
Do you get nervous?
When I first went on TV, so I actually started TV a lot earlier than Studio 10. I did some things in my young day. I went to a course. I talked about TV presenting, learned from people like Renee Brax, who's been on Chopper and all these sort of great movies. And I still speak to Renee, which is amazing. She taught me a lot of things about interviewing. And it was interesting at that time of my career, I was in corporate. So I was doing a lot of corporate videos and training videos. So hence becoming a teacher and a chef. And my very first videos were charcuterie, talking about things I loved, developing products for, sales teams and that to really help their skill set. And my love of pork is, so my first few movies was Ham the movie, Bacon the movie, and Salami the movie, and they're really quite technical videos. So it was really cool that I had this opportunity.
You have to share them with us and we can put them on our website.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to share them. I also I did a few things. The internet was really starting to come out when my career was just looking at TV. I was on Rove Live with Meatloaf, one of my favourites.
Oh, wow.
I did a competition called Celebrity Worship Syndrome because you had to have – Celebrity Worship Syndrome was a case at Channel 9 or 9MSN back then. It was talking about why you have a fascination with a certain celebrity. Mine was Meatloaf. And, I did videos that went on before YouTube online. I come in second, which is okay. I won't repeat what I did on the videos, like singing and a few other little bits and pieces.
I'm going to go searching.
There's one that you probably never want to see. And I was very privileged that happened. And then I did a small program for Aurora Network, a community station, and I did a series of six filmings starting at the seafood school where I started my career and went around talking about food in different lights and went to the markets and then cooked on the docks or went to the fruit and veg markets. They're still around today. There's some really bad episodes of me. Back then I had a lot more hair, but those viewing can't see that. But I was very lucky, and then I stopped it for a while because I was doing a lot more corporate and life gets in the way, and I always wanted to do something on TV. I loved watching Bernard King in the day and
he
Peter Howard.
He was fabulous, wasn't he?
Yeah, both
of those.
And
Pete's one of our favourite people in the world.
And a mentor later on in life, which is great. To see people like that, see Margaret Fulton, cooking live on TV.
Yes.
That was part of my upbringing, so that was really cool. I wanted to do it, and I was very privileged that my agent, Karen from Entree, took me to Channel 10 to do my first thing. And what was my very first dish on national TV?
Pork.
Because I love pork so much. I did crispy pork belly, or crispy pork loin, and also did dehydrated pork crackling and show people two ways of pork crackling. And I was probably more nervous with the fact that I was doing it with Ida Buttrose. My first TV appearance is pork, Ida Buttrose, and on Channel 10. So that was over a year ago now.
What could go wrong?
Nothing. Well, lots could go wrong, but I think the wow factor of the pork, the dehydrated pork skin in the fat puffing up was just like, oh, wow.
Who doesn't like pork crackling?
It was interesting. The whole lot of pork that I had went because the cast and the crew devoured it.
They just went for it.
They went for it. And after I really enjoyed it, and I was really lucky that I was privileged to be invited back. That was a year ago. I'm now on a regular spot there. I'm working on another program that will be will be my own program. So I don't know where that goes, but it might be 10. Hopefully it is 10.
So we just got the scoop.
You got the scoop. So I've been working on some concepts for that. TV work is fascinating, and I'm glad it's with 10 because 10's such a it's become a family. And Studio 10, working with all the different hosts, you know, I've worked with Todd McKinney and, you know, people that I just go out, John O'Coleman, and it's really cool that I get to work with these great people, Sarah Harris, Angela Bishop, some really great talent.
Kerri-Anne Kennelly.
I did one with Kerri-Anne Kennelly, which was great. That was also, again, like royalty, so people that you grow up with. And, you know, I'm very privileged that I can get on there and do it. And I love it now. I've done some wacky things, right, from wearing Christmas hats to Easter bunny hats.
You had fun, right?
I have fun all the time. Yes. It is hard. You've got a certain time. And I've also had two interruptions majorly. Royal family visit, obviously, in Australia.
Which kind of does take precedence, right?
Takes precedence. So that was interesting. So live TV is fun because you never know what happens. And another one, Naomi Watts was supposed to do a live crossover for Ronald McDonald Happy Day. And they brought my segment forward. Next thing, Angela Bishop disappears and she's going to do an interview with Naomi Watts. They cut, and I'm not sure if I'm halfway through my dish, not sure if it's going to come back on air. Next thing, it comes back on air. So I've been interrupted by Naomi Watts, the royal family, and my very first dish was pork.
That's pretty impressive.
It's a lot of fun.
Who can say that they've been interrupted by the royal family?
And Naomi Watts.
So moving on to your recent trip to Nepal.
Yes.
That looked amazing.
That was such a great inspiration.
It was. It looked to me. And tell us a little bit about why you were there and how you found just what you took away from that trip.
To be like, I've traveled around the world for my job, been very privileged. But this was a gentleman come to me who owns a college in Nepal that wants to skill up a lot of the young Nepalese chefs. And he has a culinary college, and he come out and saw me, and he had saw an episode of me on TV and then started reading my profile. And he just reached out one day on LinkedIn, said, "Can I meet up with you? I have an idea." And we met up for a coffee. A young man called Ganesh, he took me through his college platform. And what he's been successful was he placed people in Australia and Dubai. But what they
under
wanted
sponsorship?
To do, no, they had done their culinary career. They come and did their work placement here in Australia or Dubai.
Mm-hmm.
And these young chefs end up staying here. And he said, what our biggest problem is we're losing all our chefs, or we're not skilling ourselves up, and we want someone like you to come across. They said they had already selected someone else to come, and I didn't know who that was at the time. Luckily, on our first meeting, it's Karen Doyle, who's a personal friend of mine and also the president of the Australian Culinary Federation.
And if you're going to travel with anyone, you might as well travel with Karen.
Mad Irish woman. Sorry, Karen. But it was a chance to go to a country I had never been to, so Nepal was a bucket list item. We had a really tight agenda, 4 days.
It was Easter as well.
And it was Easter, over the Easter period, so my family wasn't too impressed with me. But a bucket list item, also inspiring young chefs, it ticks all the boxes for me, so I wanted to go. The Nepalese government, Nepalese tourism, and Nepalese Chefs Association plus Pacific Hospitality had funded for us to go to Nepal, and the agenda was very tight. We had 4 days of mentoring young chefs, and we didn't know how many we were getting.
What was the language barrier like?
It was interesting because a lot of them do, English is a second spoken, but okay. It's very broken. A lot of them did understand, but we also had a lot of slides and TV shows and things like that to show them, which they got excited by. So day one was at the Pacific Hospitality School. We also judged coffee competitions. We did lots of fun things. We also went to a historical town to learn about one of the oldest civilizations in Nepal. You know, it's a landlocked town. There's no seafood. They've got India bordering in China, Russia. So Nepal's this...
It's like a potpourri of nationalities.
It's a really diverse background. Mm. So day one. Day two, we had over 300 young chefs pay. And we were doing two things. We were also to raise money for a scholarship for young chefs for future Nepal. And the second thing was we also got the Young Chefs Association started in Nepal. Again, getting those young chefs inspired. One of the things I learned about Nepalese people, not only are they the most respectful and the most loveliest people on the planet, you go and say namaste and everyone is really respectful of your time. They also don't have a huge behavior of learning from books at an early age. You only use books when you go to college or university, which I found really quite unique. Some of the richer families more might have books, but they don't have books. And it was interesting to talk about that to young chefs. How do we find inspiration?
They have phones.
They do have good a version of Google. I think it's pretty limited because the internet was pretty hard over there. Also, it's a land that doesn't have McDonald's, so that was fascinating to find. There's not that one.
I have never been to a country that doesn't have a McDonald's.
No McDonald's? Because I was talking about McDonald's and Gold Standard of fries, and they're all looking at me and said, who's been to McDonald's? And
None of them had
been to McDonald's.
We take so much for granted.
We do. To train young chefs, that was exciting. Probably the most moving moment was when I got the young chefs all to stand up, hand on heart, and made them say a declaration to themselves. Because to be a chef in Nepal is not high stature.
Mm-hmm.
And also to be a chef, it's not something. There was a young, an old man, sorry, Gobinda. Chef Gobinda was one of the first chefs in Nepal to become an executive chef because it was all European chefs and no Nepalese would get past a certain stage. And Gobinda broke that barrier. And this was in the early 80s. He became an executive chef and he's the first exec chef of Nepal. Now some are coming through. Unfortunately, not a lot of female chefs go through Nepal. So we had about five come up through the day. So to encourage them and also to see a female chef with Karen, a lot of them were so inspired by that moment.
The things that we don't think about, aren't they? Do they have a lot of hotels in Nepal?
Hotels are very big in there and very much standard hotels, but very much a European background. So a lot of the hotels had the old European standards. You had a lot of European chefs traveling through Nepal because it is a tourism destination. You know, America, British, Canada, they all go hiking. Nepal has some of the best mountain ranges, including Everest. In there, that's why everyone wants to go to Nepal. Nepal's a very poor country, but the people themselves are actually quite wealthy. It's just the country's poor, so the government's not very supportive of culinary arts. And the other thing that we learnt was Nepalese chefs, once they leave, they don't come back.
They leave Nepal.
Yeah, they leave. They never come back. They'll stay in Australia. They stay in Dubai. They stay also around the world. That was an important aspect. So I made them all stand up and say an oath to be proud of Nepalese cuisine, to say that Nepalese cuisine is a trend in Australia. We've got Momo here and, you know, Momo houses and things like that all around Sydney and Australia. And it was interesting to say a pledge to say, guys, be proud of where you come from. Know your culture, know your history. You know, a lot of young Australian chefs, they go travelling around the world, but they come and bring that knowledge back here. And I said, Nepal can become a great country if you bring that knowledge back, if you train your colleagues, if you also inspire them to go abroad and come back. So there wasn't that culture. Long story short, 4 days, we raised $40,000 for the Young Chefs Association. We got a Young Chefs Association started.
The Nepalese.
For the Nepalese.
Nepalese.
All the proceeds of all the people that arrived. We had one day, which was all 150 chefs. we're lucky that we also got the Young Chefs Association up, but we also tied a great relationship. I've now got many friend requests on Facebook and Instagram, but the Young Chefs were inspired, and that was probably the biggest tick. And now they're also, they had their second World Chefs Day over in Nepal last week. They've also looked at all our content, and they're starting to do other things as well, inspire female chefs as well. So we, you know, for two Australian chefs to go over to a country that we hadn't been to before to inspire chefs and to see where the future is going, those ties will be, you know,
in place forever.
Correct.
That's really, it's such a great story. And to think that in 4 days you can make such a difference. Imagine what you could do with an ongoing relationship. So well done to you both. So finally, Adam, if the audience wants to get in touch with you and to reach out to you, how's the best way? What do they do?
So I have all the social media platforms. I have my website, chefadammoore.com.au, which you can come and interact with me there. You can also see a lot of my past TV performances, both Talking Chef and Studio 10. I am also on Instagram as chef_AdamMoore. Twitter is the same, chef_AdamMoore.
Do people still use Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter's still, well, Donald Trump, you know, he's pushing it out more.
Oh,
so
yes, that's true.
It's becoming back in light, so it's good to get out there. And also I have a Facebook page, Chef Adam Moore, and I do have a personal one as well, but lots of people can find me around, or just Google LinkedIn. Chef Adam Moore, and yeah, LinkedIn as well. Mm. Please reach out if you have any questions, or you want to, you know about mentoring, or even mentoring young chefs yourself. Please, I love those sort of questions. I love that discussion. And if you have any questions on, you know, things like what to do with the best pork crackling, please let me know, because I'll give you that recipe any day.
We actually might get that recipe off you and put it on our website.
More than happy
I think
to
that
share.
Might be a great idea. So thank you so much for joining us, Adam. Myself and every person listening to this podcast truly appreciates the ongoing work and commitment that you make to this industry. We all love so much about what you do and how you make the world a better place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
For more information, please email us at inspired@australianpork.com.au or sign up to receive our informative newsletters at www.inspiredbyaustralianpork.com.au. Until next time, I'm Vanessa Barnes, and don't forget, get more pork on your menu.